podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. It has finally arrived, the final list, the final opportunity for people to be mean to us on social media has arrived. And my name is Joel Skead, and we're going to be talking about the top 12 Scottish Premiership strikers this season. And to help steer me through this list of decent quality is Robert Borthwick. How are you doing, Robert?
I'm very well, Joel. I'm very well. I feel like people just read the list but don't listen to our words. That's why we get so much abuse.
Yes. It's reacting to the headline rather than reading the article.
Exactly. Yes, but I feel like this is a very strong list. I feel like all of these places can probably be debated, which makes me hopeful that Celtic and Rangers fans won't be furious at us. But listen, time will tell.
Oh, they'll. I think 11 of the 12 places could be debated. Number one's, pretty straightforward. But yeah, there'll be old firm fans will still look at some inclusions. I think he's far too low. But there we go. One thing I'm looking forward to is next season's edition is including Brian Graham.
Yes, hi Brian Graham. I was at Firhill last night, and honestly, he is the Championship Olivier Giroud. He's something else. Like it's remarkable, really, that every team in the Championship, he has been quite good, apart from Hibs, which is funny.
I forgot he was there.
Yeah, I know, right? And the last few weeks, he's been a revelation. Absolutely remarkable stuff.
But yeah, hopefully get the job done, and it means that Partick Thistle is back on the away day itinerary for the Scottish Premiership next season.
That's it. It is a 15-minute walk from my flat, so oh. I'd be delighted to see them back.
Ideal. And I'm guessing that is relatively close to your local as well.
Oh, yes. So I'll happily plug Gallus on Dumbarton Road as the best pub in Glasgow. And yeah, probably about a 20-minute walk from Gallus to Firhill. That's a brisk walk, maybe about 30 minutes if you're taking it easy. But yeah, actually, the guy from that works behind the bar there, I saw him in the Woodside after the game yesterday. Big Jags fan. So
nice.
Gallus and Partick Thistle shaking hands. Two great establishments in Glasgow.
Good. Well, we'll move on to the list now, and we'll stall. Oh shit, I've not even got my list up. So you go first. Who is your who's your number 12?
Number 12 for me is a striker who's no longer in the league. Is Mr. Stephen Fletcher?
Yes, I've got him one place higher, but he was a must to be in this list.
Yeah, 100%. It's like Dundee United are an absolute laughter shack. They're a shambles. But Stephen Fletcher, throughout the season, still showed that he is more than capable of playing at this level. Scored a reasonable amount of goals, considering the team he was playing in as well. But also, just his hold-up play and his aerial ability is as good as it was 10 years ago. You know, he's still got that quality to bring other players into play. It's just a shame the players he was bringing into play this season were absolutely terrible. But no, I was really impressed with him. Every time I saw him play against Hearts and any time outside of that as well, he always showed up really well. They suffered massively when he was out with injury, which wasn't a surprise. And obviously it wasn't quite enough. He couldn't maintain that form towards the end of the season. But no, it has to be in the list because he's still more than good enough to be playing at this level. And, you know, hopefully for his sake, he will be playing in this level again next season.
Yeah, I think he's had a good enough season to be higher in. I'm going to contradict myself here, but I think he's had a good enough season to be higher on the list. Let me rephrase that. If it was any other season off the top of my head, the last few seasons, his performances this campaign would have merited a much higher place, just that there's been a lot of competition, a lot of players who have scored a lot of goals. But you look at Fletcher, he's probably done more than most within the United team to try and keep them in the division. He's been that kind of that totemic figure in an attack, that kind of focal point. And it was quite clear when Goodwin came in just how important that Fletcher was going to be. It was almost like, man, look at that midfield. Let's just not, just bypass it. Get the ball away from defence as quickly as possible. Just hit Fletcher, because I always remember looking at his aerial duels after most games, and it was just ridiculous the amount of times he was involved in aerial duel. But yeah, he'd win flick-ons, he'd bring players into touches, into play. His touch is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, no, he's still absolute quality, but due to the fact he plays for Dundee United, I think that's why he's number 12 for me.
My number 12 is Curtis Main.
He's my number 11. So listen, we're already close at the start of this.
He is a player who is much maligned, more so probably because he's spelled at Aberdeen, rightly so. But I think he's another one. Similar to Fletcher's had a really important season for his team. He's been that he's been that focal point in attack for St Mirren, but more so certainly in build up, but also without the ball as well. He's key to how they defend him, and when Ayunga was fit, him and Ayunga were such a pain in the arse of a front pair, and I mean that in the best way possible. I think, again, going back to the last season, the season before, Mark Main was putting the performances he did this campaign, would have been a lot higher. Still surprised. I thought he'd actually scored more goals than he had, but some of the goals he scored were brilliant. It was he could have easily scored five against Celtic. His second goal against Aberdeen was absolutely phenomenal. The touch and turn past, I'm going to say it was Joel Lewis might have been goals then, but just he's one of those players who kind of just epitomised what made St Mirren so good this season, so difficult to play against.
Yeah, no, I mean, he completely, like you say, epitomised the way that Stephen Robinson had them set up, which was hard running and get the ball forward quickly. And really, you know, he was pivotal in both those points, because he can run in behind. Like, you kind of forget that he's got this burst of like 5 yards where he's got the strength, but also the legs start moving as well. And he's just like, it's like watching the 300. You know, he's one of the Spartans. I just imagine he screams every time he runs to try and put opposition players off, because he's just got that way about him that he absolutely, you know, he'd run through a brick wall. I hate that phrase, but it is true with him. I think he actually would if you told him to. And like you say, it feels like he scored more goals, but that's maybe testament to him and how important he is for the team. And you know, the way that he sort of facilitated guys like Mark O'Hara scoring as many as he did, because he's such a pest and he's such a distraction for defenders as well. Ayunga earlier on in the season, Alex Grieve, you know, all these sort of other players around about him that were able to put the ball in the back of the net, but not really big. He was a big part of why that was happening. And I think he was so important to St Mirren. It's a shame that he's not just leaving the club. He's going to be leaving the country by the looks of it. He'll be heading back down south, because he's such an SPFL, like, Premiership striker. He's the kind of guy that would benefit from being in like 10 of the 12 teams, because you just need that chaos and you need that guy that's going to do that running and also chip in the goals. So I was really impressed with him this season. I thought he had a great campaign.
Yeah, I was torturing myself the other week when he did really well against Celtic. I was like, would I take him at Tynecastle after Nielsen was after him for so long before he went to Aberdeen? And then, I talked myself out of it. He would allowing this season to warp my judgment a bit too much. Who's your number 10?
Number 10. So this is one that's going to annoy old firm fans, but it's Antonio Colak at number 10.
Yeah, so I've looking at the list, my next four or five, I could flip them any way possible, but I've got Colak a wee bit higher. Why is he so low?
For me, it's because it's an annoyance that I've had generally with Rangers this season. Like, you'll probably see when we go on as well, I've got Morelos probably lower than some people might, but Colak start the season so well, and it's like his one touch finishing, all this kind of stuff. I was like, holy shit, this boy is going to score at least 25. You know, he's going to be a huge part of Rangers' season. He's going to get a big move, you know, international recognition, all this. And obviously injury played its part, but he just flattered to deceive after that. And I feel like when, you know, obviously the Van Bronckhorst era came to an end and there was that transitional phase with Michael Beale coming in, he didn't stamp his authority. He didn't do anything to make me say, right, okay, this guy's going to push on, be the next level that we expected with the quality of goals that he was scoring at the start of the season. He finished the campaign on 12. And it's like, I don't know, for a guy that's come in, obviously you have Morelos and Sakala and all these guys in there as well. He annoyed me in the sense that John Lundstrom annoyed me this season. You know, guys that should be doing a lot better than they are, but just weren't. And that's why he's so low on the list for me. And also, I can quite easily argue why the other guys would be higher, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So that's where I've got him. That's why, sorry, I've got him at number 10. More due to a personal grievance than anything to do with his actual ability. But that's why I've got him at 10.
Yeah, so I've got Čolak at 9. But he falls, it's kind of similar to you, and he falls into a similar category to the player I've got at number 10, Bojan Miloski, in that I don't really like them. If they were a striker for my team, I'd be annoyed with them because I think they don't do enough for the team. And I know that's daft to say because both of them scored their goal records very good. But if you, like you said, kind of compare them to players who are above them in the list, they offer more to their team. They offer more outside possession, in possession, in build up. Miofsky, I think, is very good. He can play on the very good at what he does. He can play on the shoulder. He's quick. His finishing's decent. But I remember watching him for his Hungarian side before he signed. Well, when he was signed for Aberdeen, and I watched him. I was like, I don't know what Aberdeen are getting here. And then I spoke to a couple of folk who were praising Miofsky, and then so I went back, right, I watched different games, I watched him, I was like, I still don't see what Aberdeen are getting here, and I still see that too much from him. I know he scored, I think, 16 goals, but a lot of them kind of padded out of penalties, and you can say the same for Shankland and Van Veen, but what Shankland and Van Veen do, they are much more important to their side and how their sides play, whereas I think Aberdeen, when it's clear, it's really noticeable when Duke doesn't play, whereas Miofsky, I think it's less noticeable. I think there's games for him where he can be really effective, and I think he is effective when he has the players around him. But I think you look at Miofsky and you bring Čolak into it, they need the team to work for them, whereas these other strikers can work for the team. If that makes sense. So that's kind of similar to Čolak. I really appreciate the positions he took up in the box, his one-touch finish and his efficiency. There was, when he came back from his long spell out injured, he had one game, I think it was home at Kilmarnock, where he showed some really great moments in terms of build-up, but he's not done that consistently enough. And when you look at the evidence for the rest of players on here, they've got a much greater kind of CV in Scottish football, if you will, than Čolak. So both Miofsky and Čolak, I think, have had good seasons, but need to do better.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Miofsky in 7th. I've got him a good bit higher than you do, obviously. I think that, like, a big reason for that is his goals return, but also considering his goals return and the fact that Aberdeen were absolute dog shit for months. Mm-hmm. And he was still able to get the ball in the back of the net. Also, I do like the way he dovetails with Duke. Like, yep. I feel like Miofsky is like, you can pop the ball anywhere into the air, and Miofsky is going to make it really difficult for the defender. He doesn't necessarily win the header, but he's going to make sure the second ball comes back, and that's where the likes of Leighton Clarkson and Duke can come in. So he kind of does the dirty work quite well, Miofsky, I feel like. And obviously, yeah, he scored a lot of penalties. Some of his goals have been really good quality as well. And I think that, you know, seeing it's 16 goals for him for the season, really impressive return. And yeah, I feel like there's more to come from him. However, he was an important player when Aberdeen kind of needed that important player. That's the reason why I've got him higher up. But again, like you said, these like four places up to 7th, is it could be anyone in any position. But yeah, I've got Miofsky a lot higher than you.
So who have you got at 9?
Oh,
I have got him at So I'm just like, yeah, I've got him at one place higher. So he was perhaps one of the hardest strikers to place.
Yeah, I think so, because he's obviously got a lot of quality, but because of the way that Celtic are and the fact that Kyogo is the main man, obviously, I mean, it's no spoiler, he's number one in this list. So it's like, he's been a bit of a bit part peripheral figure. However, he has come in, he has scored goals, and he's something totally different to what Celtic had. Like, I think a lot of people are thinking, right, so he's the Giakoumakis replacement. However, he's not really the same player as Giakoumakis, and I feel like he is a penalty box threat. He's a big laddie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, similar to what we're saying about, you know, Colak and Miovski and stuff like that, he's got a decent touch and he can bring other players into play. I just don't feel like he justifies being any higher in this list, purely down to minutes on the pitch. Obviously, he had a successful start of the season at a different club. I think he scored something like 15 there. But that's not really what this list is about. It's about what he's doing at Celtic and in the Scottish Premiership. And I think that he will be class. And I think the next season, you know, you'll see him shooting up the goal scoring charts, regardless of who the Celtic manager is. I'm sure he'll get some time on the pitch and get a lot more goals. But he's got a lot to like about him, but it's a small sample size for the time being.
Yeah, it's my view is, I think there's part of me that seems really harsh to have him above both Colak and Miovski, who have been here the whole season and scored more goals. But then you bring the kind of he plays sort of the Celtic factor that he plays for the champions comes into it, and that when the limited minutes he's had, he's shown plenty of promise, plenty of talent, and kind of reasoning why Celtic did sign him. I think he is much more robust than maybe you would I was going to say you'd expect coming from maybe there's a South Korean league, but then you've seen the players like Kyogo, Ryotati, Maeda coming in from Japan, and they've had no issues with the physicality of Scottish football. So that really shouldn't have been a surprise, but it's more probably just like how much of a British kind of stylish striker he is. Just the way he likes to throw himself about in a good way. He can be, and the fact he's just quite a, they're both, he's a penalty box striker and the same as is, like Kyogo is as well, but they're two very different penalty box strikers, and there's been enough there that I think you can tell there's a lot of talent and a lot of promise for Celtic to build on. Moving to, so that was your nine. What is your number eight?
I actually misspoke. Miovski is my number eight. I don't have this numbered. I've just got it as a list, and I was very much guessing. So Miovski is my number eight.
Okay, so we've got we've talked about Curtis Main, we've talked about Fletcher, we've talked about Colak, we've talked about O, and we've talked about Miovski. So that's the first five. Good, I can count. So who's your number seven?
Mr. Josh Gino Ginelli is my
Same.
Number.
Same. This is our first agreement.
There you go. His transformation from bit part sort of flattered to deceive winger into goal scoring centre forward, absolute havoc causer for opposition defences has been remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that the player takes a lot of credit for it, but we also have to give credit to the departed Robbie Nielsen for recognising the strengths that he could bring to the team in that position. And he's just kicked on to such a level this year. His pace in behind is obviously the threat. But, I mean, I was messaging you about this last night. We're doing this very much off vibes rather than stats.
Yeah.
However, Josh Ginelli had an XG of 6 and scored 12. So he doubled his output on his XG. And that's not to say that necessarily will go down next season. He's been able to score from distance and scored rakers
mm-hmm.
this season. That, you know, you kind of see with the likes of players, like, I'm not saying he's as good as him, but Rudy Scatchell is like, when he gets from a distance and he hits the ball, you're actually quite confident he's going to hit the target.
Yeah,
because he's got that ability from range. You know, you look at like David Turnbull, for example, has that as well. If he's shooting from range, he's likely going to hit the target. And Ginelli's just transformed the way that sort of Hearts front line has performed, because I think it was quite obvious quite early on that Shankland as a lone striker number nine doesn't have the pace to really handle that position. However, Shankland dropping deeper into a number 10 and allowing Ginelli to be the guy that runs at defenders has just given Hearts a totally new dimension this season. It's a shame that it's maybe been to the detriment of the likes of Barry Mackay. However, Ginelli has shown this season why Hearts should be offering him like a three-year deal and saying, right, you're with us now, you love your football here, the fans love you, and with good reason, because he scored big goals this season as well. You know, he scored against Celtic, scored against Aberdeen, scored against Hibs. So he's really improved so dramatically this season that he's become one of the first names on the team sheet at Hearts.
I don't know, if we recorded this a couple of months ago, he might have just got into my list, but he would have been, he'd been 11th or 12th. I've always been quite sceptical of Ginelli. Just think his time at Hearts, he can be quite a patchy player who hits a bit of form and then you barely see him again, not helped by off-field issues with injuries and whatnot. We won't get into that side of things. But the more I've watched him, is it me that's wrong? Am I the baddie? The more I've watched him, and you really appreciate just how much he gives Hearts. And we were crying out for pace anywhere in the team. If there's one place you need to have pace, it's in the final third. And him putting him through the middle is just It's just given us a completely new dimension. And I'm just sorry, I'm just bringing up. It was the games against, you saw against Motherwell away when, because he got sent off against Dundee United, and then home to St Mirren and away to Hibs. We lost all three of those games, and in each game you saw how. You saw how much of a different team Hearts were without Ginelli, and that you saw it again when we played Aberdeen. He was absolutely brilliant, and then as soon as he went off with an injury or a knock, Aberdeen just pushed right up the pitch and just like, right, we can play a really, really high line there and squeeze the game, because there's no one in the Hearts 11 who are going to run in behind. Like you said, Shankland's, that's just not part of his game. If it was part of his game, he would be playing arguably Premier League football, but it's not, and that's what Ginelli has given us. And something else I came in and thought, I can't remember who the player I was talking to. I'm sure it was a Premiership defender, and he talked about coming up against Ginelli and how much of a nightmare it is, just because he makes one run, but he doesn't then just stop. Like, so you see average strikers, they'll make one run and that's been done. He gets back on side and makes another run, and he's just constantly running, constantly making angles, constantly stretching opposition defence. So even though he's not getting the ball from his run, he's moving players out of position. And I just think he's added a wee bit more game knowledge to his overall ability. I just think he's just growing as a striker. I'm really excited if he does stay to see what he can go on to do, because his goal return recently has been excellent, and you think that's double figures, and what he can do in assists and what he can do stretching teams can be what he can do for a whole season doing that.
Yeah, and just one more thing on him as well. I just remembered he was interviewed maybe 3 months ago, and he basically just said he was like off my own back, I've just been watching video of Kyogo. And he was like, I'm looking at what does the best striker in the league do. How can I try and imitate that, and how can I improve my game by watching him? Which I thought was really cool. He was just like, Kyogo's the best player in the league, so how about I try and copy him? And you can actually see that with some of the runs he makes as well. Mm-hmm. That's what Kyogo does so well, is he finds that half yard of separation, then has the pace to get away from his man, and that's kind of what Ginelli's done as well. And then the 6 yard box finishes, of which Ginelli had 4 or 5 this season, again, very, very similar to the main man in the league. So yeah, you sort of trying to learn off his own back, and that sort of showing itself in his performances is really impressive as well.
Yeah, I remember that press conference where he said it, and certain interest was piqued when he did come out with it, and I think it was after I think it was after the 3-0 win over St Johnston in April, because I think he scored one in the six-yard box. So yeah, moving on. So that'd be Ginnelly at number seven. We get into the top six. Who's your number six?
He deserves a Lifetime Achievement Award. We adore him. We'll miss him. It's Alfredo Morelos.
I am exactly the same. I was really, really wanting to put number one, just as kind of like a well done. You deserve this for all these given Scottish football. He's been shit this season.
Sitting there looking at the list, doing a Scott Arfield salute. you will be dearly missed. He still deserves to be this high for me because he is still class.
Yeah.
And only 12 goals this season. It's his poorest return. Obviously, I was talking about Colak, but a lot of the same could be said for Morelos. He chucked it, to be honest. His weight issues came back, his anger issues came back, and his will to work for the team kind of dissipated. And you see that through him. You've seen that from him in the 7 years he's been in Scotland, but this season was really the worst of it. And it was the end of an era at Rangers anyway, the likes of Ryan Kent and all the other lads, Steve Davis, Scott Arfield, Alan McGregor, all these guys all sort of shifting off as well. So end of an era, but Morelos is still just so good at what he does. And the way that he uses his body, like everyone talks about his finishing, which has obviously always been great, but the way that he can just completely body a defender by shifting his arse slightly and then he's through on goal or he's allowed space for the other man. And when he does want to work hard, the way that he works is such a positive thing for how Rangers play. But he's just an absolute prick. And I love him. And I'll always love him. That's why he's that high up in the list, to be honest. It is kind of like it's like when we put David Wotherspoon in the top 12 attacking midfielders. It was like, this is kind of a lifetime achievement sort of thing, rather than how he's performed this season. But it couldn't be a top six without Alfie, our Alfie in it. You still there? I've lost you.
Sorry, Robert. I was speaking and I forgot that I had myself on mute because I was clicking on my mouse. apologies for that. See, if you offered me Main, Fletcher, Miofsky, Cholak, Ginnelly ahead of Morelos, even after seeing Morelos this season, I would still take Morelos because I just have ultimate faith that if you just channel him the right way, he is the... maybe not the best now, but he's certainly in the top two strikers in the league. He's just not proved it that this season. Like you said, attitude. It's been one season too long for him at Rangers. The PSV debacle when he was dropped from the squad, having come off the bench against Hibs and been sent off proper Morelos of old. That kind of the writing was on the wall there, but there's still been moments where he has been the Morelos of old. It's like you look at him compared to the rest of the top 12 strikers in terms of received passes. He makes himself available so much. He's like when he plays for Rangers, they know they can have they've got a forward there that they can just fling the ball up to and then play off. I think I was looking at it in terms of received passes per 90 minutes, he was like over 25 and the next highest person was like 14. He's got his own kind of vortex and he just draws people to him, good ways and bad. I remember the semi-final, was it the semi-final? No, the League Cup final. And I remember seeing Morelos getting a lot of criticism after it, and it clearly shows how blinded I am when it comes to this lovable Colombian rogue. That I thought Morelos played really, really well. He knocked Carter Vickers off the ball, and he scored the goal. What more do you want? But no, then when you break it down, is just the way he's carried himself. It's just not been the same way. But he's still seen those Morelos moments. For example, at Tynecastle, he always scores at Tynecastle. That 3-0 game, I think it was his second goal where he got ruled. It got given, yeah. Then it went to VAR, and then as soon as VAR said it was allowed, he ran half the length of the pitch to celebrate in front of Section G and do his trademark celebration. Yes, how can you not love that?
Yeah, no, honestly, he's absolute showbiz, and that is something that Scottish football is going to miss. I hope that Rangers sign an absolute nutter to replace him, I feel like Michael Beale will just go for some gin and slim drinking MF instead of Alfie. But hopefully we can replace him with someone who's as much of a character, because like you say, like he has the Hearts fans on strings, as they
Oh.
say. And absolutely, like I am one of the people who are booing, saying, "Why is he not getting booked?" And then after the game, I'm like, "Nah, do you know what? That was class." Like, I wish our players would do that sometimes. No, I absolutely love Alfredo Morelos. And like you say, he is probably still the second best striker in the country. He's just not shown it this season. That's it.
If there's so many moments over the years where I've just been standing at Tynecastle with pals and they've just been losing the rag with Morelos, and I've been just standing there with a smirk on my face, and then when everything dies out, it's like he's just kind of just turning on me, so he's just brilliant, isn't he? And they're just absolutely losing the rag. But is it the only player I've really seen bully both Christoph Berra and Craig Halkett with ease?
Yeah.
He's just got. Just if he put everything into his football, he could just be incredible. Instead, he'll probably go to Turkey and play 30 times for Beşiktaş and score about 3 goals, and then just go hopping between China, Saudi Arabia, and then back to South America. But he's
Yeah.
given us nice times.
Yeah, he has. He has. He's given us the best of times.
Who is your number five? I think we've got the same 7, 6, and 5. Who's number five for you?
I am going to go for Kevin Nissey Nisbet.
Yes, I thought that was the case. Nisbet is, I think, would be safe to say that if he was fit for the full season, he might be challenging higher. Just I don't think there's any way that he could have been any higher.
Yeah, I think if he's fit for the full season, scores at that rate, then he's a top three shout without a shadow of doubt. The way that he's expanded his game, and not just at Hibs, but in the last few years, and the way that you saw him at Wraith and at Dunfermline, and the way that he's able to drop deeper but still drive forward, his finishing inside and outside the box, his instinctiveness, and the way that he has sort of grown into this guy that can actually bring other players into play. I think that's something that's maybe not as understood by people. I think they just see the goals and they think, oh, he's quality, he's going to get a big move, big money, all this kind of stuff. And he is going to get a big move, maybe not for as big money as Hibs probably deserve, to be honest with you, for a player of that caliber. But he's just, his goal scoring record and his goals per minute is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And he's such a promising player. I know he's I think people probably assume he's a bit younger than he is as well, to be honest. However, his future in the game and his future in terms of the Scottish national team, if he can stay fit, is incredibly bright, because he's a guy that can sort of transcend styles of football. I think he could go down south and easily still boss it down there. He's not just a Scottish Premiership standard. His ceiling's a bit higher than that. And yeah, like you say, without the injuries, he's well up there in contention for a top three spot, but just with the injuries is the only reason why he's lower down. But he's absolutely quality. He strikes the ball so cleanly with both feet as well. I mean, his goal against Hearts last weekend, Xander Clarke should have done better, but the way he hits the ball with that velocity straight into the bottom corner, the accuracy of it as well. He's a magnificent finisher, absolutely magnificent finisher. So yeah, Hibs will miss him next season. But he's been quality when he's been called upon this year.
I echo all of that. Really, ever since it was kind of him and Shanklin duking it out in the championship, I always thought Nisbet was the better player. And then even since then, I always thought he had a wee bit more to Shanklin, and he probably fully fit. He probably does, just because of his physicality and his. I think he's a wee bit quick. That's a wee bit quicker. I think he is quicker than Lauren Shanklin as well, which is huge, because if you want to play at a higher level, namely kind of if you're going down to England, you need to have a wee bit of pace, and that's something that Shanklin lacks, but Nisbet has. And he listened to him after, oh, where, what game was it? Oh, might have been the Derby defeat for us at Easter Road. He came out afterward and spoke about his how useful his spell on the sidelines was for helping build his physicality. He get himself in a better shape to deal with being a striker who can engage defenders. And I think you've really seen that since he's came back. He can really hold his own, and I think that's been key, because he is someone who drops in to like number 10 positions or midfield to link up play. There so often was like Porteous would fire the ball to him, and I think maybe before when he did that and then a defender followed him, I think he'd easily be knocked off the ball or the defender could get in front. Now he's got a much better shape and body to hold off defenders, to protect the ball and then play it around. And I think we've seen that since he came back into the Hibs team. Is awareness for a striker is excellent. So yeah, I think he will go down south. I would love to see him go abroad, but I think he would go down south and be a success.
Yeah, I think the only negative mark against him is his penalty taking.
Yes.
You know, he's talking about that. I don't think he missed one before he joined Hibs, and now he's missed a bunch, and it's like, ah, that's a shame. Because I wanted to call him Pevin Pisbet for Tony and Chris Finn, but unfortunately, he's just not very good at them.
No, just leave it to Shankland when it comes to the Scotland national team. Number four, who is your number four?
You just said his name, Lauren Shankland.
Not going to lie, I was a bit surprised by how low Mr. Shankland is.
When I describe why I've got the other guys ahead of him, I think it will make sense to you. Mm-hmm. But Lauren Shankland, number four. Listen, we've both of us are probably two of his biggest cheerleaders, because again, similar to Nisbet, it was that lack of understanding of quite how much game he has when it comes to, you know, holding it in, finding the wingers, and also just his ability he's a very intelligent footballer. And that if the tactics change, if the shape changes, he instantly knows what to do to get the best out of that change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's so good at playing at that number 10 position. He can still play number 9 as well. But his standard across the whole of the season hasn't really dropped. And I think that's a huge testament to him. I think his biggest goal drought was like 5 games or something. And that was during the Nielsen travails. And that's when he was playing up front as number 9 as well, because Ginelli was out injured. So he's so important, such a massive part of this Hearts team. He took the captain's armband when Craig Gordon's leg snapped in two, and he's improved since then as well, because I think that responsibility has added a lot to his game. But you just look at the numbers, 28 goals, you know, the first Hearts striker to do that since John Robertson, and obviously basically since the 70s as well, is the only time that that's been bettered as well. So his numbers, his sort of record-breaking season has been so impressive. And yeah, I just love him. And thankfully, I feel like he's the sort of player that not many teams will want to spend the money on, because he has got those limitations in terms of pace. You know, he's physical, he uses his body really well, but he doesn't have the pace to sort of drive past players. And I think that's what the one thing that will probably hold him back and keep him at Hearts, which is a good thing for us. But and he takes a fucking good penalty, I'll tell you
he
that.
He does. So I've got Kevin Van Veen at number four, but I'll speak about Shankland, because I couldn't separate Shankland and Duke. I just honestly, just because I think Duke's got much higher. We'll come to speak about Duke, but Duke's got much higher ceiling. He's got probably more strings to his bow, but just this season, I think that it's been so hard to separate them. So I went, looked in the mirror, realised the Hearts fan, and stuck Shankland at number two because I love him so much. I love watching him so much. Just what he does as a forward, as a striker. I was I certainly knew what to expect off Shankland, having seen him at United and in that Mickey Mellon team where he played up front on his own in the Premiership. Folks said, he didn't score many goals, but it was what everything else he did. And he's brought that understanding to a lot of fans that he's a really, really good player. You picked up on his intelligence. He knows exactly where he'd be. He's played in a kind of withdrawn wide role. He's played as a number 10, has played as a number 9. His technique and touch is incredible. The amount of times it kind of just ood and ad at Tynecastle because the ball's fired into him and he's dropped it. He's just stopped it dead and then used his body and his movement to get away from defenders to create space to then play and link play. And for so long this season, he's been our best number nine and our best number 10. I think he's got those so much qualities to his game. And yeah, the one quality that's really missing is pace, and that will stop him going on to maybe play in England. He could probably go and play abroad again, but having played in Belgium, I'm not sure how much he'd be keen on that. The only move I can really see them making is potentially Rangers. And just being this kind of like Chris Boyd figure who score a lot of goals. And then you look at some of the goals he scored, some of them being absolutely brilliant, whether it's be header, the wee kind of clip dink finish against Ross County was so good. Yeah, I've just been, he's the type of striker I've been crying out for so long, and very much glad he is wearing maroon. But I can understand why you have certainly one of these players higher. But Kevin Van Veen, talk to me.
Yeah, so, I mean, Kevin Van Veen has matched Lauren Shankland in terms of goals, and he's done it for a Motherwell team that in about February time were all but relegated by many of us. They were rubbish. They were absolutely awful. And Kevin Van Veen, you know, even during the Stevie Hamill era, was still chipping him with goals, even though Hamill was playing him out wide, which obviously is not his position. But he's been able to essentially come through a really roller coaster season for Motherwell, break so many records for Motherwell in terms of his goal scoring, consecutive number of goals scored, all this kind of stuff. And he's done it in a way that he's not just scoring tap-ins, he is transformed into one of the best strikers in the league, in my opinion, the third best striker in the league, because he's still got a little bit of pace. He's got so much skill. He's got battle. He's a wind-up merchant. He annoys opposition fans, annoys opposition players. He is an absolute dream for guys like Blair Spittle to play alongside. Christ, that boy Mandron and all this, like he almost made them look like decent enough footballers. John Obika, you know, all these guys playing alongside him. And he's been able to do that throughout a season where Motherwell were absolutely terrible. 28 goals for the season. And like I say, just absolutely on fire, especially the last couple of months. And really, it's the last couple of months is why I've got him higher up in this list. But the way that he's essentially allowed, like he even allows Max Johnson to play in a more positive way, because Johnson's coming into the penalty box so often. Van Veen knows exactly where he's going to be. He either drags defenders away or he offers himself up for a tap-in. And again, it's that intelligence I'm talking, not dissimilar to Shankland, in that he's got that wherewithal to know exactly where to be at what time. And again, like it's maybe a freak season for him. You know, time will tell. I'm not sure if he'll beat Motherwell next year. He's under contract, but obviously there was teams in China and that sniffing about him. But honestly, I feel like this season he has absolutely excelled himself, and he deserves to be in the top three conversation. He deserved his nominations for Team of the Year, for Scottish Football Writers Association Player of the Year. You know, he deserved all that because he was able to do it for a team a lot poorer than Hearts. And Shankland obviously had the benefit of playing alongside better players. And that's why I've got Van Veen in third.
You mentioned the freak season, and that's probably kind of what went against him. I just think looking at Shankland's previous certainly helped, but in a way it was a freak season. It could be a freak season, but at the same time it's not, because like last season with Van Veen, you could see he had so much quality, and there was games where if he like turned it on, he could dominate defences, so he could score goals, and then there was just like lack of consistency. Like he spoke about it at the Motherwell Player of the Year. Motherwell shared a clip from I think the last season's Player of the Year awards. We kind of just said he was just with injuries, suspensions. Motherwell fans didn't see the best of him. It's like, oh, but I'll be back next season. I'll score more goals, and he's obviously done that. And you look at him in terms of what he is capable of, in terms of that he can. He's good running with the ball. He's good running without the ball. He's got a bit of pace. He's really strong and rangy. He's just such a difficult player to come against. He's got come up against. He can score all different types of goals. He can score goals out of nothing. He can create for himself. He can create for others. He can drop deep. He can run in behind. He can be in the penalty box. He can score a penalty. So he is a player who can do all. And Stephen O'Donnell, when the live show, before we did the live show last week, someone asked him about Van Veen, and he just said he's the best striker he's played with.
Yeah.
And Stephen O'Donnell obviously has played for Scotland. Not Scotland there. Got loads of great strikers, but certainly I've got someone like Che Adams. So it was really high praise, and yeah, I'd be really intrigued to see what happens next with the Dutchman, if he stays or goes somewhere else, and how he gets on.
Well, listen, because of the aggregate of these two lists, Shankland will be above Van Veen anyway, so you'll have your way, Joel. But good. That's, I feel like I put up an impassioned defence for Big Kev there.
Yeah, again, I agree. I very much appreciate every single thing you said. However, Kevin Van Veen doesn't wear a heart stop, so Lauren Shankland does. And I've watched just about every game of Shankland. I just really like him, and I think he with 2, 3, and 4, I think there's arguments for all three to be in different positions within the top four. But Duke, he is. If I took my heart's cap off, he would probably be my number two, because he's probably the best forward, best player outside the Old Firm.
Yeah, I think this season he has been the best player outside the Old Firm, but also he's doing that beautiful thing where he's toeing the line between cult hero and just hero.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He's got this affinity with the fans. They absolutely love him. He loves them. You saw the scenes after they beat St Mirren and got into third place, and Duke Cam in the dressing room, like, he's got the charisma, he's got the body, he's got everything, and on top of that, he's got the goals, he's got the assists, and he's got the ability to get fans off their seats. But you know, more importantly for Aberdeen, get fans into the stadium as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no surprise that obviously their attendances have picked up this season, but guys like Duke do that. Because he's a hero for like young fans. Young fans will love Duke because it's like, oh, he's fast, he's exciting, he scores goals. But then you've got the older boys will absolutely adore him as well. Like he spans generations in terms mm-hmm. of appreciation, because he is just that mercurial talent that Aberdeen needs and the league needs, to be honest with you. And yeah, this season he's been an absolute thrill, an absolute joy to watch, because when he gets going, and when he runs at people, and the wee tricks and the wee flicks and skills, he doesn't do them for no reason. He does them to get past a man. I mean, his back heel goal against Dundee United, to be fair, he didn't need to do that, but he did it anyway because he was just like, "Eh, fuck it! Like I've come this far, I might as well back heel it over a hapless goalkeeper." But he's just, there's no way you can watch him without having a smile on your face.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of player that I just absolutely adore watching. And again, like, you'd imagine that he's here for a good time, not a long time, because yep. he has got that amount of quality. Obviously, he came from a foreign league. He came from Benfica. And you'd imagine that there'll be teams overseas having a look at him again. But who cares about that right now? He has been a massive part, obviously, alongside the likes of Graham Shinney and Matty Pollock, of why Aberdeen were able to triumph towards the end of the season and seal third place with really a bit of ease and a bit of breathing space at the end, because they were the players that, you know, they had leadership qualities. They were able to drag the team forward. And that's what I mean. It's like, Duke's not just a show pony. He's a team player. He works hard as well. And he's got that leadership and, you know, and leadership, not in terms of barking at the players alongside him, but leadership is if to say, like,
taking the ball.
He's like, I don't mind taking the pressure. I don't mind taking the ball. And I don't mind, you know, easing the strain on some of you guys because I know I'm good enough. And that's what he's had this season. And yeah, honestly, he's just an absolute, absolute joy, and he had to be number two for me.
Oh yeah, he's been so much fun to watch. But I think there's been a natural progression as well. It's not throughout the season for him that you can see this player is like developing in front of our eyes. I was there for his debut. He came on the second half in the League Cup against Stirling Albion. The game was won. Aberdeen absolutely thrashed Stirling in the first half. And Goodwin threw him on. He wasn't fit at all. But it was just straight away, just like you knew you were in for you were in for great fun, because he was just throwing himself about, just getting involved, engaging with defenders, winning fouls, and you got the feeling that it might take him a wee bit of time to get that fitness. I think he mentioned it in his Player of the Year kind of acceptance speech at Aberdeen, that he thanked like the sports scientists, because I think he came and he had to get into proper shape. So it did take time, but it probably didn't take nearly as long as I thought it was going to. He was after a while just realised, shit, this is a very, very good player, and Aberdeen are much better for having him in their starting 11. And he plays in a way, he reminds me of the Boulder scene in the Raiders of the Lost Ark, where he's carrying the ball, he kind of just destroys everything in his wake. He just barrels through opposition, and when he gets up and he can shift as well with the ball, he can move very, very fast with it. And going back to like the goals, the United goal you talked about, his improvisation with the ball is incredible. You look at the goal he scored against Ross County as well, just being able to get his body and himself into different positions to score all sorts of goals. So yeah, he's just a very, 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 very good talent, who has, like, straight away you can see clubs from England and abroad will look at him and go, this is a player who has both the technical and physical qualities that we can harness, and you can get better and better. So yeah, you can drop him into many different situations. He can handle it. He wasn't very good at tracking back earlier in the season, but I think that's something that's been worked on with Barry Robson off the ball. And he saw it in the win over Ross County, where it was essentially Ross County against the back three and Duke. And it was Duke was getting back into like fullback areas to win the ball, and obviously scored as well. So yeah, Aberdeen, when you consider Aberdeen signed him and Tibbs signed Jair Tavares, it's very funny.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Jair Tavares has been I forgot he played for Hibs until I saw him on the pitch warming up before the Edinburgh Derby. So that's all you need to know about Jair Tavares.
And he's rubbish. Moving on to the worst kept secret in this list, all lists. Number one, Kyogo Furuhashi.
Not just the best player this season, potentially Celtic's best striker since Larsson. I think that's fair to say. Is it fair to say? I don't know.
Yes, I'm just trying to think who they've had. So the Dembele, Edward, Hooper, Griffiths.
Yeah, I prefer Kyogo to all them.
Yeah, he is.
He's just so good, and it annoys me so much. Like I've not seen a player with movement like his in a long, long, long time in Scottish football. He is just—he's a ghost. He drifts between centre halves. He finds that yard, even half a yard of space is enough for him. And so often he just pops up at the right place at the right time. So many of his goals are 6 yard box, but that's not a mistake. That's not just because they're all in. That's him bamboozling defenders with his movement. You know, is he going to go near post? Is he going to go back post? Is he going to hold on a penalty spot? No one knows what he's doing at any time. And I like to think that he doesn't know either. He just knows that one of those three options is going to work well for him. And it's the instinct that takes him there. But also, the way that he plays outside of the box, I think, just doesn't get enough credit, because, again, it's that movement. Celtic, you know, transition with the ball so quickly and so well. And again, guys like Jota, guys like Deza Maeda, they're able to find space because Kyogo is this guy that is essentially taking the attention of sometimes three defenders at the same time, because they're like, oh my God, we can't lose him because he'll score. His finishing's that good. But it doesn't matter, because then you've got Maeda or Jota or whoever who's coming in. The way he facilitates, the way Celtic play, the way he gets, the way Celtic plays, like, he works hard as well. And he seems like a really sweet, nice guy, which I think, you know, obviously that doesn't really matter in terms of this, but so many Celtic players have been hateable over the years, and I just can't hate him. He's just, I mean, there's not really much else to say other than he is the best player in Scotland. And again, is it good time rather than a long time? I'm not sure. You know, Kyogo is not exactly one of the younger players that you signed. I think he's 28, 29. But he's just, he's got this weird sort of, he's bow-legged, which again, just, I don't know why that adds to watching him play being so much more fun. But he's just honestly, it annoys me, it frustrates me how good he is and how good he has been under Postecoglou.
Oh yeah, it's watched all his goals recently, and you just get a even greater respect and admiration for just how good he is around the box. Yeah, I agree that his work outside the box is very very important for Celtic, but it's just he just becomes a different beast altogether when he's looking at the goal and he's looking to score, because I think you mentioned, like, oh, is it just kind of just luck to get in that position? Be funny if it is just kind of luck to get in the position, but no, I just think he's got such great intelligence and awareness of how the game develops. Because if you go back and watch him, there's a goal recently. I can't remember who was on the ball. Might have been Starf. It was a right centre back or midfielder was on the ball, and he was kind of stepping into midfield, and it was Kyogo basically shouting and pointing to tell him to play to Hatate, because he knew as soon as Hatate gets it, then that was against St Mirren actually, and then a St Mirren defender would have to engage with Hatate, and that would give him space to then get the ball in the box and score. And he did, he scored. And it's just, he's always telling his teammates where to put it, where he's going to go, and then when that's not on, he'll then check his run and then slip in behind another defender. And then when he gets the ball, his awareness of where the goal is, he doesn't really need to, like, doesn't need to look before he shoots, because he knows where he is in the box. He knows where the goal is in relation to his position. I look at one of the goals he scored against Rangers at Celtic Park early in the season, that was kind of like a kind of touch and turn. But he didn't really need to set or look. He just knew it. And his efficiency, I think he's got the best conversion rate in the league, perhaps, and the fact he's, and it goes to is just the amount of chances he gets, he finishes them so well. He's just so efficient in front of goal. Just a perfect striker. Just perfect, especially for Celtic.
And what's mad is he underperformed against his XG as well. His XG was like 36. Yeah, he's phenomenal. Honestly.
How did he not get taken to the World Cup for Japan? It still bamboozles me.
Honestly, it is fucking wild. But then Japan did really well, so I mean, maybe we're wrong. I don't know.
They could have won it. They had Maeda playing up front. They could have won it if they had Kyogo.
They could have won it. Kyogo and Hatate both got left out of that, and they're probably the two best players in Scotland. Absolutely wild. But no, honestly, Michael Moles, Henrik Larsson, Kyogo Furuhashi, three of the most frustrating players to play against, because you know they're going to score every fucking time they're on the pitch against you.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're a Kilmarnock, Hearts or Hibs fan, Fred Morelos as well. Yes. A final mention for the Colombian as we finish our top 12 strikers list. A list that going forward is not going to include Morelos, but like we said at the start of the show, could include Brian Graham. And it'll be interesting to see how many of these players are still at their club next season. There could be not that many, but we will see in 12 months. So thank you very much, Rob, for joining me to look back at the top 12 strikers in the Premiership.
No problem at all. Really enjoyed that. Thanks, Joe.
No worries. And thank you for our listeners for listening and for supporting us, those who do, on Patreon. And now Rob and I are going to go across to Patreon and speak about the Scottish Cup final and have our fingers crossed that a certain Scott Gardner-led club are going to win. Goodbye.
Come on, the blue and reds.
Sports Social Podcast Network.